Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz migurei aviv be'eretz Kenaan. Yaakov settled in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Kenaan.
OU Israel presents...
In. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for both Parshat Vayeshev and for Chanukah, which begins Motzoi Shabbat this coming Saturday night. Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 22nd day of both Kislev 5777, as well as December of 2016. Remember that this month, 29 days of Kislev, match the day of the month of the first 29 days of December, and we're nearing the end. This Shabbat is not yet Chanukah, but it's tantamount to being Chanukah for different reasons, and by the time we do Amir Tzashem next week's show, next Thursday, Chanukah will be in its waning condition. Now we're ready to get it started, so we will spend a lot of both shows talking Chanukah. The music at the beginning, no, let's do Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shema V'koli Tehiena Aznecha Kashuvot L'kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Mi'amod. Ki imacha hasalicha lama'an tivare. Ki viti Adonai kivata nafshi velidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim laboker, shomerim laboker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achinu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha'omedim ebein bayam ובין ביבשה, המקום ירחם עליהם, ויוציאם מצרה לרווחה, ומאפלה לאורה, ומשיבוד לגאולה, השתה בעגלה, ובזמן קריב, ונאמר, אמן. Okay, let's get into it. The opening music was a piece called The Ma'oz Shuffle, based on Ma'oz Tzur, and obviously... I chose that because Chanukah is imminent. So imminent, in fact, that I just wanted to mention that tomorrow, which is Friday, Erev Shabbat Vayeshev, and technically 2 days before Chanukah, although tonight is 2 nights before Chanukah. Anyway, it is very recommended, highly recommended, that one should have his Chanukiah set up on Friday, preferably Friday morning, ready to go for lighting on Motzoi Shabbat at the first feasible moment after Shabbat is out. I'll talk more about this later, but let me at least make a Vayeshev Chanukah connection. Vayeshev is definitely one of the sedras that brings us into Chanukah. There are situations when Chanukah runs from Shabbat to Shabbat, in which case the first day of Chanukah is Vayeshev. There are situations like this year where Vayeshev is immediately before Chanukah. there are situations when Vayeshev is the only Shabbat Chanukah, that's on the rare side, being the second day of Chanukah. The other times, it is either anywhere from 5 to whatever days before Chanukah. Here, when Chanukah is on Wednesday, when Chanukah is on Monday, so 2 days before is Vayeshev, 2 days before Chanukah. When Chanukah is on Wednesday, first day, then Tuesday, Monday, Sunday, 4 days before. When it's on Thursday, 5 days before. When it's on Friday, it's Shabbos Chanukah. When it's on Shabbat, it's the first day of Shabbos Chanukah. And when it's Sunday, it's the day before. So Vayeshev, I don't need to convince you anymore, is definitely a Chanukah time. Parsha, Miketz, is the real one that is most associated with Shabbos Chanukah. But Vayeshev is a close second. And Vayeshev's main theme is the tension, friction, enmity between Yosef's brothers and Yosef. And not just in thought, but in deed as well, when Yosef was sold into Mitzrayim. There's a whole range of things that commentaries try to say about the Yosef and his brothers' business. But I think there's a medrash that sums it up in one direction, which we cannot ignore. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeYisrael, God said to the people of Israel, Atem Mechartem Et Yosef, you sold your brother into Egyptian slavery. Chayechem, God says, I swear by your lives, the Jewish people, that you will say every single year, Avadim Hayinu Lefaro v'Mitzrayim, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. I found that a very powerful medrash, because it says in no uncertain terms that because of the friction between brothers, which resulted in Yosef going down to Mitzrayim, which further resulted in Yaakov and the rest of the family going down into Mitzrayim, which further resulted into slavery, oppression and slavery after Yosef and all his brothers died. And it's a recurring theme. We can't shake it off. It's a very, very powerful thing. Sadly, it has a strong element in Chanukah as well, but our sages, in their wisdom, did not stress or display that aspect of the Chanukah story. Only the victory of the Jewish people over the Greeks and the miracle of the oil. But they did not say in very clear way, there is a cryptic reference to it, and that's about it, that there was a problem before the Chanukah story of Mityavnim, Jews who went along with the modern culture of Greece and had the attitude of, why should we be old-fashioned and hold to the traditions and practices of ancient primitive Judaism when we have the light of Greek culture to teach us a new way of living. I say that with trembling, because that's exactly what we have to watch out for. And it's not just the Greek culture we have to watch out for. It is every culture that the Jews have found themselves among throughout their history. And that goes to the American culture and the European culture and the British culture. Not that we need to reject the culture, but we need to filter it to take the parts that are constructive and useful and utterly reject the move towards assimilation, which is rampant in our time. So that aspect of Hanukkah is not played up. It is extremely played down. And yet, may take it as a subtle nudge, and I'm not going to dwell upon it more, that the parsha that brings us into Hanukkah and the parsha of Shabbat Hanukkah, Miketz, deals with mostly, practically entirely, with the problem of Yosef and his brothers. No coincidences here. We are embarking on a holiday where we're not going to dwell upon the Civil War aspect of Hanukkah. We're not going to dwell upon the strife between the clash between the Torah true Jews and the assimilated Mityavnim, but it's there. And we got to watch out for it. And that, to me, is the most potent lesson and message for Vayeshev being that which brings us into Hanukkah. Now, the Hanukkah story, as many of us grew up with, is very kindergarten-y. This has been a thought that's rattling around my mind for the last couple of weeks, and it applies to many other things, not just Hanukkah. But let's use Hanukkah as an example. You go to a kindergarten kid, and you say, "What's Hanukkah?" And he'll tell you the story of the terrible Greeks that made many gezeirot, many decrees against the people of Israel in Eretz Yisrael. They defiled the Beit HaMikdash and did not allow its practice. And a small band of Hashmonaim, also known as Maccabees, revolted and vanquished the much larger Syrian Greek army and were able to go into the Beit HaMikdash and clean it up. And they found a one-day supply of oil, but they needed oil to last for 8 days, and miraculously the oil lasted for 8 days. And that's why we have Hanukkah, and that's why we have Chanukiah, that we light candles, and we say Hallel, and we say Al Hanisim, and everything is fine. Now let's upgrade the Hanukkah story. My goal is not to disillusion anyone. My goal is to increase the appreciation of God for what he did and of our sages for what they did in establishing Hanukkah. But we have to keep in mind that it is no longer sufficient to have the kindergarten version of the story. I already started you off by mentioning the infighting between the zealots who preserved the Torah and its traditions, who wanted to risk not only their lives, but the lives of all of the Jews in the land of Israel by fighting against the Greeks, versus the assimilated Jews who modernized, accepted Greek culture, and minimally maintained their Jewishness, but not their complete observance and practice of Torah Judaism. So that already is a sobering wrinkle in the story. Then you have the Rambam's statement that following the victory and the business with the oil, the Chashmonaim succeeded in restoring the Malchut, the kingship, Jewish sovereignty over the land of Israel for about 200 years until the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. In fact, if you look at the history of that period, you find, this is according to one book's analysis of it, a period of 26 years, not 200, 26 years, where there was real Jewish sovereignty, during which time the fights between the Jews and the Greeks continued. So that already is out of the kindergarten picture. And following those 26 years, Rome exerted an increasing control over what happened in the land of Israel, to the point of influencing appointments of the Kohen Gadol and the Beit HaMikdash, to the point of influencing the kingship. There were Chashmonaim descendants who took over the throne by murdering a half a dozen family members. There was rampant idolatry worshipped in the latter years of the Hasmonean dynasty. There was no real result or legacy of the original Hanukkah, and yet our sages, in their wisdom, decreed in perpetuity an 8-day holiday with the saying of Hallel and Al Hanisim and lighting of the Chanukiah. So what do we understand from this? The kindergarten version doesn't say it, but it almost implies, and they lived happily ever after. Far, far from it. And again, I'm not trying to detract. I'm trying to say that our sages in their wisdom decreed a festival, a joyous festival, even with all of the problems that existed. And that's because a festival like this is meant for us to enthusiastically and lovingly say thank you to God for the military victory, for the miracle of the oil. And therefore, even with its problems, Chazal were able to see how important it was for us to be grateful and thankful to God for what he did. Now, on that note, I want to mention another aspect. If we're talking about two main miracles, the victory of the few over the many, the military victory of the Chashmonaim, and the miracle of the oil. And if you take those two miracles and ask the question, which was greater, which was more important, which was more significant to the continuity of the Jewish people in the land of Israel, I think you'd have to clearly opt for the military victory. The argument against the miracle of the oil being given any special significance is that, what was the big deal? If they came into the Beit HaMikdash and they found that the oil had been defiled, first of all, there are opinions that you could use defiled oil if that's all you have. So they didn't even have to miss any nights of the menorah. Second, let's say they chose not to use defiled oil and to wait for freshly pressed oil. So it would have been another week before the menorah would be able to be kindled. We're talking about a Beit HaMikdash that was rededicated, cleaned up, takes time. Many other things go into motion, sacrifices, incense, and Lechem HaPanim, and other functions of the Beit HaMikdash. And we would be certainly excused for not being able to light the menorah if we couldn't light the menorah. So what was the big deal? But the military victory guaranteed the survival of the Jewish people. That's big. And yet, our sages made the fuss. Yes, it's true that Al-Hanisim speaks of the military victory, but the main mitzvah of Hanukkah, which is the lighting of the menorah, lighting of the Chanukiah, obviously points to and dwells upon the miracle of the oil. And my answer is, it is very significant because of how technically insignificant it is. I'll tell you what I mean first in the form of a mashal, and a parable, and an analogy. Picture a parent, grandparent, aunt, uncle, walking in the street with their charge. Could be their little child, nephew, niece, which has one word, nibbling, which is both nephews and nieces. And the child breaks the holding of the hand, slips his hand out of your hand, and runs into the street, into the path of an oncoming car. You see it, you immediately move into action, and you reach out, grab the kid, pull him or her back to the sidewalk just in time, because the car, when he saw the child, stepped on his brakes, but the brakes didn't stop the car before he would have hit the kid. So you saved the child's life. What do you do now? Some people would yell at the kid, "Don't you ever do that again. When you're walking with me and you're holding my hand, you make sure that you hold my hand. And even if you're not, you don't run into the street. You could have been killed. What's the matter with you? How many times do I have to say it?" Or you can pick up that child and give him a hug and a kiss and a soothing word, because he's been through a traumatic experience. And maybe even take him into the store and buy him an ice cream. Now, the kid, if he were to voice this, would say, "My grandfather saved my life and gave me an ice cream." How do you compare the two? Certainly, saving the life is more significant. But the ice cream carries a message. And that message makes all the difference. I love you. I don't want anything bad to happen to you. I will, of course, do whatever I can to prevent anything bad from happening to you. But I will not show that anger. I would rather you see the love when the Chashmonaim wanted to light the menorah. It was not just a random choice of one of the things you do in the Beit HaMikdash. It was the demonstrative thing, the beacon. There are sources that tell us that the light of the menorah was able to illuminate courtyards all over Jerusalem. And especially if you say that what the Chashmonaim did was bring the menorah out into the courtyard in order to light it there, even though that's not its proper place. This was considered an extenuating circumstance because they needed that menorah to make a statement. They needed to say, hear ye, all Jews. For the last how many years we were under the thumb of Greece. We were forbidden to study Torah. We were forbidden to perform mitzvot in public. We were forbidden to circumcise our children. And a myriad of other decrees against Judaism. And this lighting of the menorah of the Beit HaMikdash is an announcement that you no longer have to fear the Greek oppression. You have children to circumcise. Do it and invite your friends to the party. Make it a public display of a Torah mitzvah. You want to keep Shabbat? You don't have to go into your basement, lock the doors, cover the windows to keep Shabbat. You can do it wherever and however you want. You want to learn Torah? You want to teach Torah to groups? Don't be afraid. You could do it. And that makes the miracle of the oil all that more important. It makes the miracle of the oil God's smile, his hug, and his kiss. It makes the statement that it was the right thing to do to revolt against Greece, as the Hashmonaim did, and this is God's stamp of approval on their behavior, because that was not so clear. There were people who felt it was the wrong thing to do. Why do you make waves? And this is an old story, and it keeps coming back. I can't not think of my mother-in-law's first husband, who I never knew, who perished during the Shoah, and a daughter that they had who perished during the Holocaust, and my mother-in-law who survived and remarried and had another daughter. But her first husband said, Hitler, Nazis, it's a fad, it'll blow over. Why is everybody getting all into a tizzy? And he stayed and made no preparation or plan or move to leave, and he was perished. So there were Jews in the time of pre-Hanukkah who said, what are we making fuss for? Just go with the flow. You want to keep Shabbos? Do it in private. Do it in your basement. You want to? You don't want to accept the Greek culture? Don't accept the Greek culture. But don't make waves. And the Hashmonaim made waves. And God's miracle of the oil is a stamp of approval of what the Hashmonaim did. It's also a sign of love for Bnei Israel. It also triggers the fact that Torah can be learned and mitzvot can be performed anywhere you want. To bring it into contemporary times, I had a very special privilege quite a number of years ago when Yosef Mendelevich, prisoner of Zion, first came to Israel. He spoke shortly after his arrival at the Israel Center, the OU Israel Center, old building on Strauss, and I, to a packed, standing room only, turning people away audience, had the honor of introducing him. I had chatted with him before the program, and I discovered something which I said. I said, the person that I am about to introduce to you and I are the same age. Not only are we the same age, for the last number of years, we've had the same occupation. Teacher of Jewish studies, teacher of Hebrew. I got a salary for it. He was thrown into prison for it. And that's the difference. And that's why Hanukkah is so significant, regardless of how many years, regardless of the fact that they were still infighting, regardless of the fact that we were still battling the Greeks at the beginning, regardless of the fact that we fell under the control and thumb of Rome, regardless of the fact that the Kohanim, which the Hashmonim were, took over the kingship which belongs to the tribe of Yehuda. Let me put it like this. I believe that had it not been for the miracle of the oil, had there been a victory of the Hashmonaim, and all of the negative things that I mentioned, I don't know if our sages would have made a fuss. I don't know if there would be a holiday. But because of that miracle of the oil, that supernatural miracle, that smile and kiss by God, made it worthy of being a holiday. How about a song? Okay. The following song is the stanza of Maoz Tzur that deals with Hanukkah. Maoz Tzur touches upon the Egyptian experience and the Purim story and various other episodes and eras of Jewish history. Makes an interesting point and an important point that Hanukkah is not by itself, not isolated, but one of many events, and it echoes and re-echoes throughout Jewish history. But this one is Yevonim Nikbitzu Alai. The Yevonim, the Greeks, gathered on us, Azai Bimei Hashmonaim, Hashmonim, back in the days of the Hashmonaim, Uforzu Chomot Migdalai, and they broke the walls of my tower, the Timu Kol Hashmanim, and they defiled all of the oil. Uminotar Kankanim Nasenes Lashoshanim, and from one straggly flask, a miracle was done. Bnei Vina, men of deep understanding, Yemei Shmona Kavushir Urnanim, established this 8-day holiday of songs and praise to God. We'll talk more about that, but first, listen. Let me talk a little bit about this 8-day business. Bnei Vina, men of deep understanding, establish an 8-day holiday. I don't believe it could be. And a one-day supply of oil lasted for 8 days, and therefore, men of deep understanding established an eight-day holiday. Doesn't make sense to me. That's a no-brainer. If you needed 5 days for new oil, we'd have a five-day holiday. You needed 12 days, we'd have a 12-day holiday. It doesn't go like that. There's no rule that holidays match in the number that's related to what happened. But I've said this before, I'll say it again. The Greeks had an agenda. They wanted to take away Torah and Judaism from one of their subject nations so that the people would be ripe to accept the Greek culture and assimilate into the Greek Empire. Whatever they banned was geared towards taking away Torah from us. Whether it was Kiddush HaChodesh or the Shabbat or Torah learning, whatever. But not because they had a philosophical or theological differing opinion. We don't find that their concept of their culture called for not having a Shabbat, a day of rest. It doesn't fit. They took it away. They wanted to take it away from us because they didn't want us to observe Judaism. But all of the decrees were geared towards weakening the hold of Judaism and Torah that it had on the Jewish people. There was one area of mitzvah that the Greeks actually had a real difference of opinion, and it was circumcision, Brit Milah. They felt that Brit Milah was mutilating the body that God created us with, and they considered it an abomination. And they banned it for their positive reasons, not just to take us away from Torah, but because they abhorred the idea that they worshipped the body and athletics and art and architecture and statuary. And we, the Jewish people, did this terrible, terrible thing of mutilating our boys at the age of 8 days old. So when they banned circumcision, you could see it as a cause celebre in the battle between the Greeks and the Jews, much more than any other area of Torah and its mitzvot, because they had what to say about this. Kashrut, I don't think they had a problem per se with the concept of keeping kosher. They didn't want us to do it because they didn't want us to be different. But that's not the same as being opposed to Brit Milah, circumcision, on principle. So when there was an eight-day miracle with the oil, I believe it was God tapping our sages on the shoulders and saying, no coincidence, 8 days has a special significance. And Chazal picked it up, and they said, yes, it does. And not only will we observe Hanukkah for 8 days, but the original rule of lighting was modified to make a different number of candles each night so that we remain focused on the eight aspect of Hanukkah, and not just another day, another day, another day, another day, we finish it, not yet, keep going, another day, now, no, one more, two more. It's not that. You set up a Chanukiah, you have eight candle holders ready to accept eight candles. And on the first night you light one, on the second night you light two, etc., etc. And that carries with it the message of the real fight between the Greek culture and Torah Judaism. And when Torah Judaism prevailed, it was a victory symbolized by the ability to do Brit Milah without fear of death, without fear of anything. And that is the true spiritual victory over the Hashmonaim, over and above the physical military victory. So it has to be eight. Brit Milah is the eighth mitzvah in the world. Seven Noahide laws. Then Avraham Avinu was given the eighth mitzvah, the first illogical, irrational mitzvah. God created us that way. What are you taking your knife and cutting it off for? And the answer is that God encharged us with perfecting our physical form and challenging us to perfect our spiritual form. That's the significance of Brit Milah, and that's the significance, therefore, of Hanukkah and its miracles. It had to be eight, and the eight have to be emphasized. You know, we call the eighth day of Hanukkah Zot Hanukkah. This is Hanukkah. This is what it means. Can't have an eighth day without seven before it, but this is what it means. A word about the first candle this year, Motzoi Shabbat, and then we'll finish off with another Hanukkah song, and that'll be it for Torah Tidbits Audio for this week. There are two mitzvot to perform at the conclusion of Shabbat. Let me emphasize, Shabbat must be completely finished. We're talking about the time, which this week in Yerushalayim is 5:21, and in addition, the fact that people will daven Ma'ariv and say the Havdalah passage in the prayer called Atachanantanu, or as a minimum to say Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'Chol, blessed is he, referring to God, who distinguishes between the holy Shabbat and the profane, the secular days of the week. When 5:21 happens, and when one has recited the Havdalah words with his mouth, Shabbat is over. And there are two mitzvot that are now vying for our attention. One is a weekly one called Havdalah. And that's taking a cup of wine and spices and a candle and reciting the psukim and the brachot and the Havdalah bracha. That's one mitzvah that's on our agenda right after Shabbat. The other one is Hanukkah candles. First night, first candle. Next week, it'll be the eighth candle. Same situation. Havdalah and Hanukkah candles, which one goes first? Now, the first reaction that people have to that question, and the most common response would be, well, of course, Havdalah goes first. You finish Shabbat with Havdalah. And then you get on to the next item of the agenda, and that's the lighting of Hanukkah candles, which belongs to Sunday, which we light on Motzoi Shabbat on Saturday night. And in fact, there are many, many halachic authorities that say that's exactly what we're supposed to do in our homes. We're supposed to say Havdalah and follow it by the lighting of the Hanukkah candles. However, there's another point of view. The other point of view says, well, wait a minute, Shabbat is over. 5:21 in Jerusalem, whatever time you have in your community, has passed. You daven Ma'ariv, you said Atachanantanu. You didn't daven Ma'ariv, you said Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh L'Chol. It's not Shabbos anymore. Now you have two mitzvot to perform. And one of those mitzvot is more insistent on being performed right away than the other. Havdalah, I like to think of as laid back. Havdalah says, hey, Shabbos is over, but don't rush. Take your time. Don't eat or drink before Havdalah, but don't rush to get rid of the whole Shabbos feeling. If you're sitting at the table and you're still singing Zmirot, go for it. Not in a rush. 5:21, you could say Havdalah at 5:22, you could say Havdalah at 6 o'clock and at 7 o'clock. Hanukkah candles, on the other hand, are very, very insistent that they be lit immediately. They would have liked to have been lit 40 minutes earlier, but you can't because it's Shabbat, and Shabbat does not allow you to light candles. But once 5:21 comes, let Havdalah wait, it doesn't mind, and light your Hanukkah candles. As I said earlier, set them up on Friday so that with a match, with a helper candle, ready to go. Soon as your daven Ma'ariv and Shabbos is over, light your Hanukkah candles. And then say Havdalah. Now, in the presentation of these two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch, the conclusion is very rare. The conclusion in most disputes is like one or the other. In this case, the conclusion is, if you choose to do one way, Havdalah and then candlelighting, that's okay. You have on whom to rely. And if you choose to say Havdalah, to light Hanukkah candles first and then say Havdalah, that's okay because you have on whom to rely. Minhag Yerushalayim, which not everybody in Jerusalem follows, Minhag Yerushalayim is to light Hanukkah candles first and then Shabbos candles. And even if it ruffles feathers and offends a person by saying, yeah, but Havdalah belongs to Shabbos and Hanukkah candles belong to the weekday, that's true. But I'm telling you, the argument is Hanukkah candles want to maximize the number of minutes after dark that they are lit. And that's not going to happen if you also wait for after Havdalah. Just an argument. Bottom line, there is a machloket, a dispute. Either option is acceptable. Most important is that Shabbat is actually really totally over. And then most people will say Havdalah first and then light Hanukkah candles. Fewer people will follow the Vilna Gaon Shita, Minhag Yerushalayim, and light Hanukkah candles first, and then say Havdalah. If you're going to do the same thing you've always done, go for it. If you're interested in changing anything, consult a Rav, because it's not an easy idea to just change Minhagim, especially when different Minhagim each have a halachic validity. So I don't know which side of the argument earlier I came down stronger for, but let a Rav help you decide if you're thinking of changing. And that goes for candles and oil, oil and candles, indoors and outdoors, outdoors to indoors, sunset and stars out, or switching from stars out to sunset. We're not talking about during the week, not on Shabbat and not on Friday. And any other change in what you've always done, or if you need to review what you've always done to make sure that it's acceptable, should be done with the guidance of a Rav. On that note, let me wish you a Shabbat Shalom, a Chanukah Sameach, Lehish Tameya, and specifically to listen to one more song before the end of the show. Have a good one. Okay, I'll say it one more time. Shabbat Shalom, Chanukah Sameach, Lehish Tameach.